You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
This song makes me happy. I don't know why. Maybe it's because I associate it with my hetero life partner.
Yeah. I hope so. They sure make me sing.
Band the Man Morrison. From the dark end of the street to the bright side of the road. And help me share my load, right? That's what friends do. So joining me is a great friend of mine. This is the nicest introduction I've ever given you, by the way. P. Kimball Holmes here on a Friday. The All Marine Radio head chef. So, Kim, how are you today?
I'm doing great, and hello, Marines everywhere.
Yeah,
I hope you're having as good a day as we are. Pretty nice around here. It rained yesterday hard all day.
Did it?
But that's the first day all summer where it was just, you know, continually raining. So it's back to the normal, beautiful, bright, sunny day. On the bright side of the road, baby.
Exactly. Here's a question for you.
All right. Yes.
Other than the obvious. Right.
Yes.
What makes you happy? So I have a pen that I got recently that whenever I see it, it makes me happy. Right. I don't know if I told you about my pen, but my pen, it came 2 weeks ago tomorrow, maybe 3 weeks ago.
Yes.
And I opened it and I see this pen and it's a very nice pen, right? But the body is made out of wood. And so, I read the letter and the wood is from Bellawood, where Marines fought in the First World War.
And, no kidding.
Yeah. And in the letter it says, there have been very few of these pens made. I was given three of them, and I want you to have one because I believe that you're worthy of owning something like this.
Wow.
From a Vietnam veteran. Right.
Drop the mic.
Hello. So whenever, but the interesting thing, you know, you'll just be going through the course of your day, right?
Yeah.
And I see my pen and it makes me happy. I get my little, I do my happy dance. Oh, there's my pen. I'm worthy. You know, because I've been trying my whole life to be worthy.
You've been worthy for a long time.
I don't know. Well, maybe, but I think, you know, it's something that, you know, you grow up a certain way and you're raised a certain way and you strive to be certain things in your life. And all of a sudden, you know, and there's people that always, you know, that say nice things to you and things like that. But for whatever reason, right, somebody says it and it's a little bit different because of their background. And I mean, and his background is that he's a Quezon Marine. Now, even people that don't know a whole lot about the Marine Corps who were alive during Vietnam, they remember the siege of Quezon. And, you know, when, and I think when I, so for me, the reason it makes me happy, so to think that somebody who went through that looks at me and says, that dude's worthy? Come on, man.
Yeah.
I'm out.
That's serious.
Right. But I mean, so things that make you happy. That song, for whatever reason, and maybe it's, I do associate it with you and hanging out with you and laughing and having fun, cause it is an upbeat kind of fun song, but that wouldn't be enough. There's a lot of upbeat fun songs. Why does that song, when I hear it, make me smile? I don't know. Do you have things that make you happy like that? The things that you see, things that can, you kind of walk around the corner, right, and they strike you. So anyway, I know I'm kind of putting you on the spot there, but.
No, well, it's funny. Yesterday, you know, I had all my dad's flight logs and all that stuff in from World War II in a writing desk that I bought in Port Townsend, Washington. It's an old English writing desk. It's 100-and-some years old.
Roll top desk.
And I was
roll top desk.
Kind yeah.
Of
no, it's not a roll top desk. It's a travel desk that it carries like a little suitcase. But you open it up and you can write letters if you're on a train or in a stagecoach or whatever, you know, on a ship. But that, and I had his one flight log that we had talked about a year ago.
Right.
And I just started looking at it and I was finishing up a keychain for a friend of mine and I started reading it, and from the first flight until he was back in the States, faring around Piper Cubs and things like that. But all the battles he was in, the Bastogne, D-Day, you know, and he writes it right in there, D-Day, towing gliders, this, and just page after page of this stuff. And it really touched me. And
it doesn't sound like it made you happy, though. I mean, it made you proud.
Well, it made me happy that he got through it.
That's true.
Not happy what happened when he got home. But, yeah, I was happy.
But you know what? There's a lot of people I know trying to, you know, how do you find a silver lining in that? The bottom line, though, is, Kim, your dad lived his life on his terms. And
yep.
And you know, none of us gets to decide how it ends. There's other forces that have a say in that, and that sucks. But I mean, your dad lived a great life. Your dad lived like the lives of like 10 people crammed into one short period of time. And you know, and I think that's when you live your life, I mean, I think you live it on your terms, and you cram a ton of living in it. And he certainly was that guy, man. He certainly was that guy.
Well, you know,
how about something that makes you happy?
I've done well. Any music makes me happy.
No, I mean specific something. Okay, so you have to. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to remember this thought. All right. And when something does strike you, you have to write it down, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about it.
Okay.
Because that's a hard, because what I'm talking about are very, very specific things, right? That change my mood.
That, right. 10. And yeah. I certainly understand it.
Yeah, and so, you know, you know what I've even thought about is, what will happen if I ever lose my pen?
Well, I wouldn't even want to talk about it.
And you wouldn't want to be near me when it happens either. Because, first of all, I don't like losing my stuff, period.
Yeah.
And so I've decided that, well, I can't take my pen with me. As much as I would, I have to be very careful with it. It has to stay in my office and have a special spot. And I can't take it with me. It would destroy me.
Hear yourself saying that. You're going to keep it in your office in a special place. so you'll always know where it is.
Because I love using it, right? So, I mean, I want to take it with me. But
yeah.
I don't think I should take it out of my office.
Oh, heck no.
Maybe to watch the living room to watch the ball game or something like that. But that would be as far as it could ever go, I think. Because
I would not let it leave the house or your office for that matter.
All right. I'm with you. Here's an email. Mac, way to jack up the chef's opening, man. What the hell is wrong with you? You're all happy. He's crying. He's like that. He's a big guy who likes to cry. So there you have it.
Yep.
I don't have an answer.
You weren't jacking it up. You were starting it off right.
I know. Are you going to send me that log so I can do some investigation and kind of, you know, write a little?
I'm going to send you a map I found.
Ooh.
I
love maps.
You can keep the map. I'll send you the logs. I'll send you everything
I mean, hell, you can take pictures of it and just send those. I mean, they're good enough.
No, I'm not going to. You want to see the log itself.
No, but they're, no, that's your private property. I'll see it when I come up to G-Funk one of these days.
Okay, but the map I'll send you and some other stuff. It was really cool, but my sister put me on her Spotfly. I guess that music station thing.
Spotify, you mean?
Spotify, whatever the fuck it is,
or Spotfly, either one.
Spotify. But it's great tunes. It's no commercials. And she said, "I'm going to put you on my family plan." So because I don't pay for anything.
So you're freeloading off your little sister.
Yeah, you bet I am.
Come on, man.
And,
come on, man. What's
and I just don't. Music should be free anyway.
Oh, listen to you. Now we're going to go straight up hippie.
No. But there are stations I've listened to, but you have to listen to the commercials too. And this just straight up, you can pick your tunes.
Right. No, that's the beauty of it. Yeah, you pick it. And if you'll pay, right, you eliminate the commercials. If you don't pay, then you get the commercials. So that's how that works.
Yeah. And it's great. No commercials. And she's allowed to have six people on her family plan.
Right.
So I'm one of them.
Yeah, and, congratulations.
I'm digging it.
My kids are.
Yeah?
My kids are all on my Netflix account. I'm like, look, you guys are like grown up. Like, can you not afford the $10 a month? Well, why should I spend it if you spend it? Like, all right, dude, whatever.
Yeah, and that's I just have attitudes about, you know, they $10 here, $10 there, this and that. And if you got somebody that can has a family plan,
yes.
Then spread it around. Spread the love around,
spread the
baby.
The freeloaders around. That's unbelievable.
Hey, I listened to your first hour today.
Uh-oh.
And I thought, geezy peasy, what the hell's going on? You know, it's just the discipline and
well,
whatever.
Again, but you look at it, Kim,
I don't mean to change the subject.
No, I'm
fascinating.
No, but it start. I mean, look around at the things that we read about in school, you know.
Yes.
I talk about the fact that Colleen could fail every course she has in her high school, and she's not going to be held back. And so,
no.
And so, you know, a kid, you know, with 40 run-ins with the police, threatening, saying he wants to kill people in Florida, somehow or other is not disciplined because he's got a right, and then he goes to school and kills people, and all the kids say, oh, yeah, we knew it was him. No question about it. And so it's just, I mean, it's endemic in our culture, and I would tell you, now it's spread to the military. And so people come into the military looking for this experience. They don't want it to be like it was in high school. They want strong leaders.
Discipline.
Right, and they need structure. And I know it's evolved since you and I were kids and all of that. But still, I think the pendulum has swung too far, and it's got to swing back because that's what they need. And our job is to give them what they need, not what they want. And that they might initially balk at that. But I'll tell you what, you and I both know, you cannot be a success in anything in life, right, without having self-discipline. And how do you learn that? Somebody teaches it to you because we don't come out embracing it. And so to me, it's a, and again, you look, in fact, a friend of mine said, hey, would you put together for me a list of major, you know, things that have happened in the military by virtue of either lack of discipline or whatnot. And oh my God, it's, you start putting it all up, and between the collisions of ships, between the SEALs events, between Marine smuggling, between Green Berets and embezzling, you look at it and you're like, it's stunning. It's stunning. And so, I don't know.
And another pet peeve is, in sports, kids growing up in sports, everybody gets a trophy. That's bullshit.
Well, did you see, I don't know if you saw the news, but going around in the last
couple
years.
You win or lose, period.
Oh, no. Well, we think we can build your self-esteem if we give you meaningless medals, right?
So. That's so bogus and
well, no, it takes away from a parent looking at a kid saying, hey, if you want one of those, you've got to go earn it. That means you've got to try harder. You've got to, what? Like, what? What do you mean? Well, and I'll link it to what one of the things that I deal with is the whole issue of isolation. And one of the ways people isolate themselves after trauma is, I'm so special, I'm so unique, nobody could understand the situation I'm in or the circumstances. They just won't understand. That's bullshit. There's millions of people that are struggling with what you're struggling with, and you're not that unique, okay? And once you understand that, guess what? You could learn from other people. But when you're committed to the snowflake philosophy of the planet, we're all so different, blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, that is the narrative. That is the narrative. And at some point, something has to push back against it. And the problem is, none of that exists. But the story I was going to ask you about was that the average age that a child stops participating in organized athletics is 11 years old.
Stop it.
Swear to God.
Oh, that's pathetic. Holy moly. Oh, jeez.
Listen to this. Study. 70% of kids stop playing sports by the age of 13.
Holy. I can't. That's hard to believe.
The average kid quit sports at the age of 11. And so, I can understand 13 because that's the point where sports get serious. That's where puberty kind of kicks in. And so if you're going to play a contact sport, right, that's when the kids that started growing hair early start having their way and you hang on for dear life, right? So I could probably understand that. To me seems normal, right? But I was surprised that 11 years old is a little bit early. So why is that? Lack of fun, bad coaching, too much pressure from your parents, financial issues. I don't know. But that seems to be awful young, because the benefits of playing sports is, we all know them, those of us who played them. And then there's another, fantastic program that I've been a fan of for a long time now.
Yes.
And it's in Kim's hometown. It's called Summer Performing Arts. And they take every kid that comes and signs up, as long as you play by the rules, you have a spot. They will find whether you're...
That's right.
And it's a theater company. So whether you're acting, whether you're doing lighting, whether you're doing production, whether you're building sets, they find a spot for you. And their guiding philosophy is, hey, this is the same thing as any sport. We're going to teach you about discipline. We're going to teach you about respect. We're going to teach you about trying hard and being committed to something.
Teamwork.
Right, and they just use the arts doing it. And it's a wonderful, wonderful program that has grown to...
Yes, it is.
Yeah, that has grown to, it has thousands of kids now in Grand Forks, North Dakota. And the people that run it are great guys, and they're funny guys.
Yes.
And so...
And everybody gets to play.
Right.
And I don't know why people stop doing sports at that young age. It just doesn't make any sense to me. Because, my gosh, you play sports, whether even in college, intramural sports, pickup games on the weekend for softball, baseball, football, basketball games. They're still playing hoops at the Y at noon. A bunch of geezers come down there they're having fun.
Right.
But when sports stops being fun for kids 11 and 12 years old, I don't understand why that's
it is. To drive them away from playing something that most kids enjoy, right, you don't miss it by a little bit. You miss it by a ton.
Right. Yeah.
You miss it by a ton. And so we're talking about Little League goes to the age of 12, right?
Yep.
And soccer, right? Soccer, I think, is the most, has to be the most played sport in the United
States.
For
young kids.
Yeah.
Yes. And that's fine.
But why would
that's
you
quit, fine.
Why would you quit soccer? I mean, most of the sports played,
I think it's a computer screen. I think that's what it is.
Well, the problem is that if you don't have mentors, right?
Yes.
So Kim and I have a friend. His name's Mike Berg. He was the NFL High School Coach of the Year.
Think of that.
Yeah, maybe 10 years ago. And he is what year is this? Published on, holy shit. This is surprising me. What are the most popular youth sports? Participation in youth sports has grown for both boys and girls. Sports provide benefits, blah, 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 blah. Number one sport, according to ESPN, the most popular sport for girls is basketball, with over 450,000 girls playing for a school-sponsored team. The sport has risen between 2006 and 2012 to become the most popular among boys, with over 550,000 boys playing for all school-sponsored teams. But I'm not talking about school-sponsored teams. Number two is baseball, softball, t-ball, termed America's favorite pastime. Baseball and its variations are popular sports among America's youth. At a young age, boys and girls begin by playing t-ball. As they age, they may enter, blah, blah, blah. Football drops to third. This is the third most popular sport among boys and girls, with a million interscholastic participants. But see, this is interscholastic. I'm talking about even before that. So that would be high school sports. I'd be curious about youth sports, and that's why I agree with you. It would surprise me if soccer was not overwhelmingly the most popular sport.
Yeah,
2013,
and that's a good thing.
2013, 80% athletes quit after the age of 15. Start early, player burnout. I'm just looking for number of. They don't have numbers. That's what I want. But again, so let me get back to Mike Berg. Mike Berg wanted me to coach high school baseball, and I was a little bit nervous about it. Because most of my leadership, although I've coached my sons playing hockey, right?
Yes.
I'm not really a touchy-feely person. I don't stand disrespect well, and which might surprise nobody. And so I looked at him and I said, "But Mike, if one of them tells me to screw off, I'm not supposed to choke him, right?" And he said, no, you're not supposed to choke him. He said, but that won't happen. I said, how do you know? He said, because they don't say that to people like you. They don't say it to me. They don't say it to leaders who clearly define where the lines are. They'll do what you tell them to do. And they'll enjoy it. And he said, and Mac, we don't care one bit if how many games you win or lose. We want you to come out and help us develop young people through exposure to athletics. I said, I can do that. He said, that's all we want from you. We want your leadership and your mentoring. And I tell a story about a kid who came up to me out of practice the day after a game and said, Coach, could I talk to you? And I said, sure. I'm thinking, oh my God, now what, right? So, he's not happy for some reason and whatnot. So he said to me, I want to thank you for what you did, what you said to me yesterday. And I said, and I couldn't, like, what the hell did I say to him? Like, I couldn't remember, right? I had brought him into pitch. He'd never pitched before in a high school baseball game. And he was nervous. And I want to say he's a sophomore pitching, in a varsity baseball game. But, he could throw, and I knew he'd do well. So he comes to the mound, and he's nervous. And when I gave him the ball, I said, look at me. And he looked at me, and I said, I believe in you. You're going to do great, right? You can do this. And I handed him the ball, and I walked off the mound. And he did fine. And so he looked at me, and he said, yesterday, when you said, I believe in you, I know you can do it. I said, yeah. And he said, I've never had a man say that to me in my life. So,
Wow.
Well, I remember going home that night, and feeling like my pen kind of happy, right? Your heart's happy.
Yeah.
It's a feeling I get when somebody, somebody tells me about how post-traumatic winning has impacted their life. And if your kids aren't involved in some activity that gets them in touch with people like the Mike Bergs, maybe the Mike McNamara's, if they don't go to work for guys like Kim Holmes who love them, who care about them, will show them, what it is to be successful, to include discipline, then you're hurting your kid. And you're making it harder for them to be successful. I said hi yesterday to a Marine that I met before I did post-traumatic winning months ago someplace.
Yeah.
The audio-visual guy comes up to me and says, you need to talk to this Marine over here. And I said, what? And he said, Matt, come with me. And this kid's standing there shaking and with tears coming down his face. And I said, hey, Marine, what's up? And he said, sir, I can't watch you kind of thing. And so I said, well, come with me. So we went out. We went into this little coffee kiosk thing that was next door.
Yeah.
And I said, what's wrong? And his father committed suicide on the phone with him. His uncle had murdered his wife. And then committed suicide. His brother had committed suicide. after this kid had found out that his brother was having sex with his girl while he was away. And so he tells me that, and it's almost like you don't believe it, right? This can't be, but it's all true. And so I texted him yesterday, and anyway, the way the story goes is I said, you need to stay here. And then the commanding officer came in, and he said, no, you need to stay for this. I promise you. Sit in the back, sit by the door, and if you got to get up and leave, then do that. But I want you to see this. You need to see it. And he came up afterwards, Kim, he had a huge smile on his face, and I said, you stayed? And he said, I did. He said, thank you. And I said, no, man, we're going to become friends. You can live a great life, I promise you, and you can touch the lives of other people, and you need to do that. And now, 9 months later, going on 9 months later,
yeah,
he's getting out of the Marine Corps. He's cleaned up his life in terms of alcohol. He's got a job with the police department in his hometown. And talking to him yesterday, I mean, it's one of those things that makes your heart happy, right? Makes your heart happy.
Makes it sting. You bet it does.
Right. And so without strong leaders that can say, you know, the easy thing to be would have been, okay, well, yeah, I'm not going to force you to sit here today, right? But that's not what people who care, and that's not what people who know what it is to be successful know. What they know is that you've got to go through that stuff, not run away from it, and we'll help you. We'll support you. We'll give you a blueprint.
Yes.
And then we'll nurture you. And you've done that with all the different guys that have come to work for you. Guys like Mike Berg have coached. I mean, Mike Berg is one of the most revered coaches in North Dakota. And I think he won one state championship, and he did that right before he retired.
Yeah.
And he said to me, why do you think that is? All those days when you required those kids to do, you know, what they said they would do, when you held them to a standard, when you treated them with respect, when you made it fun, that changed their lives. So I think it's really, yeah. I think it's really, really sad. I think it's really, really sad. And sports, and again, I say sports, but it could be the arts as well. It's having your kid involved in something where they have a mentor, and as Kim said, they're not sitting at home in front of a computer screen beginning the process of isolating themselves and not being involved. And whether it's military or in the civilian world, one of the biggest problems today, and a friend of mine, my cousin Tom, who's, you know, probably my best friend. But my cousin Tom, you know, he and I were talking a couple of weeks ago. He goes, you know, Mike, I was talking to a youth counselor, you know, about some of the problems kids have. And I asked him, what's the biggest problem? He said, isolation. He said, you know, we think because we have phones, everybody's connected. But we spend less time with each other. We spend less time hanging out. We spend less time shooting BB guns and shooting slingshots and all the fun stuff that we used to do and took so for granted as kids. And he said, and so they're lonely. They're lonely.
Yeah, they are.
So, really interesting. Anyway.
And people that are out together in a group and they're all texting each other and they're standing right beside each other. What is wrong with that picture? I mean, it's too intellectual for me. I mean, I'm the kind of person that I want to talk to somebody, I talk to them. Wherever it is. Hi, how are you?
You want to get your hands on them.
Yeah, and then some people look at you like, who are you?
Then they come back though, right?
Yeah, they do, because I keep after it.
Here's an email from one of my friends. The biggest, I don't know if he's a friend. He constantly hounds me, always like dogging me via text message. The biggest issue for seniors is isolation and loneliness. So, I mean, it's now a part of our culture. You have a device that connects you to everybody, and yet you don't go hang out. You don't go do the things that, you know, that have connected us to people. And then you wonder, and then the military piece is, right? We talked about you don't have the formations. There's not that jocularity and all that laughing and joking when you're together in a group. And so when you say, well, how did we get there? It's the same way the culture has gotten there. And you gotta do the things that make people collide and in the military you have to do them so you can look at them. So you can see, you know, why is he not shaving? Why does his uniform look like shit? And those are normally, those are all symptoms. Yeah, those are all symptoms of his life's falling apart or her life's falling apart. And so, you know, the same thing, you know, in our greater culture. So that's why you can see it manifested itself in the military. And just as our culture needs to take a look at itself and say, you know what, this whole burger thing, have it your way, probably not a good thing, right? There's certain things that you need to have your way, but there's other things that you need to participate in groups and do things. And well, anyway, interesting.
Hey, how was the Air Force Academy?
I go next week. In fact, I just got a text.
Oh my gosh!
I got a text message about that. Actually, they've been fantastic. They're excited. Evidently, there was three. I thought they were asking me to come speak, and so what they did was they put together a slate of three different people that could come speak, and then their commanding officer, in conjunction with a few other people, made a decision. And so I got a phone call, and they said, we've selected you to come speak. And I thought, well, wait a minute, I thought I was already in. But I wasn't, but I am now. And so, yeah, no, I'm
fantastic.
I'm excited. Jacques Lammer is going to be there, so I'm excited about that. But again, I think that the answer is more of us. It's not more outsourcing. It's you've got to love them more. You've got to know them better. And they joined to be part of something like that. And I think that they're given too much space. I think that we as leaders need to know them better and love them more. And so really what I do, you know, and I've had to kind of think about this and how do I articulate it very briefly, but post-traumatic wounding is a peer-to-peer program in the military. And then outside the military, it's us to anybody that'll listen. So that we can help them, and it deals with two issues. The first one is ignorance. None of us know how to deal with trauma because nobody gives us a class on that in grammar school or high school or college. And then the people that go through it, they tend not to want to talk about it. So you kind of stumble into it, and then you know hopefully you have wise people that help you, but a lot of people don't. And so, so the first thing that post-traumatic wounding, you know, deals with is ignorance. This is the path that you'll have to follow. And it's not going away.
Okay.
And that's okay. And then the second thing it deals with is the issue of isolation. And how do you combat that? Because I always say, you know, a facing movement is like when you're in formation and somebody says, left, face, everybody turns left. That's a facing movement. The facing movement to the door of destructive behavior that can lead to suicide is isolation. And if you understand the path and you have somebody to talk to, normally it's going to be okay. And so that's really what my thing does is it encourages people to talk to other people, to share their truth. And the truth I talk about is the truth that I've learned from this culture of the Marine Corps, that it has lessons in it for everybody, no matter who you are. And so it's pretty cool and very exciting. And then I think the following week I go to North Carolina, and the commanding general of one of the Army divisions heard about it. And so he's going to either be there or send his people to attend it while I'm in North Carolina. So again, exciting stuff, and hopefully it'll extend the reach of post-traumatic wounding, which means it'll save lives, and which is, that's why I say I'm the coolest dude.
It's so important.
I'm the coolest dude.
What you're doing.
I'm the coolest dude I know, man, because every day I like yesterday.
Saving some lives.
Well, yesterday I you know, these text messages from this Marine. And then last night, a friend of mine shot me a text message, so I called him, and he's from Winnipeg, and he's a funny dude. And he says, Mac, I quote you so often, it's a joke. it's a joke. And so I mean, my life is good. And I just bought some new pots and pans last night, too.
Did you?
Yeah, I went to Bed Bath & Beyond, but I didn't. Susan told me to go to, not Bed Bath & Beyond, what's the name of it?
Kohl's or something like that.
No, more, lower price.
Oh.
There's one in Grand Forks.
Well,
it's on 32nd Street over by the freeway.
Walmart.
Smart and Final, something like that, but it's not Smart and Final.
Jesus. Menards.
No. But anyway, yeah, it was a little bit cheaper.
Yeah.
So I went. Now, let me ask you this. Yeah. What is your thought about, like, Teflon-coated pans and things like that? Because there's people that will say, that stuff's not good for you. Don't buy those.
Today, the Teflon is so high-tech and so safe. And for the most part, it does not peel. Teflon used to peel off the pans, and you'd eat it, and that's not good for you. Now, on your pans, if they're Teflon coated, do they have a thick bottom on it? Because you want an aluminum, about a quarter of an inch aluminum piece on the bottom. And then there's stainless steel and Teflon. I'm assuming that's what you bought. And that aluminum transfers the heat evenly throughout the pan, and you don't get hot spots. The thinner the bottom on your pan, the more the whatever you're cooking has a chance to scorch and screw up your food.
I thought it was cast iron that spread the heat and aluminum didn't.
No, they both do. But it depends on the thickness of the aluminum or cast. Cast iron is cast iron. It's right. A heavy, right. Thick pot, and that definitely spreads the heat evenly. But the thing about cast iron, if you have oil or something in there, it holds the heat longer. It takes longer to cool down.
TJ Maxx. Now, TJ Maxx.
TJ Maxx. TJ Maxx. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, Susan.
Well, TJ Maxx, you can buy La Crusette.
What is that?
La Crusette there.
What is that?
But it's a cast iron. It's an enamel line. It's French.
Oh.
And they're very heavy. And I have a Dutch oven that's a La Crusette. And it's cast iron, the whole thing out and inside's coated in enamel. And you can cook roasts and braise things in there, make stews, do all kinds of things. You should have at least one piece of that. Now, if you find a La Crusette, you'll save about $50 on the pan if you find it in TJ Maxx. The art form to buying anything in Bed Bath & Beyond is they issue 20% discount.
So I walk out of Bed Bath & Beyond. I'm all excited, right? Because I went over to buy a 1-quart saucepan and a 2-quart saucepan.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. And I'm looking at different single pans that you could buy, and they're like $25 a piece. So for another $50, I can get like a set of pots and pans, you know.
With lids,
right? And so it wasn't what I intended, but it's what I left with. And I even bought a new salt and pepper shaker for my counter. I want to ask you about pepper.
Yes.
how many different ways can you buy pepper? And this is going to be a stupid question, but I noticed that there's a pepper shaker that I have, and the pepper's like almost like a powder. It's very fine, almost dusty. And then the pepper I like, though, has a little bit more granularity to it that almost it would be a little bit smaller than what comes out of my pepper mill. And I know I can adjust my pepper mill, but you know what I'm saying? So am I crazy, or is that the way it is?
Well, it you should always have a pepper mill on one by the stove and one on your dining room table that has a variable adjustment for the size of the grind. When you buy pepper that's already ground up and stuff, it gets old real fast, whereas a pepper mill, you grind it fresh, and that makes a world of difference in the flavor. Big, big, big time difference. So, we get this Himalayan salt. It's like pink salt. And we have a grinder for our salt also. So, to throw that in there, that's not necessary because they have, you know, kosher salt, sea salt. You just don't want to buy Morton's iodine salt because iodine is not that championship for you. But with a pepper mill, avoid buying different flakes, different grind that's already pre-ground. Have a pepper mill so you can turn it to fine grind for certain things and coarse grind for like steaks and things like that in soups. Okay?
Got it. When I was looking at the pepper, I was like, I don't like that pepper, right? So I bought a new salt. I was pretty proud of myself. Yeah. And then I came home and I heated up a piece of salmon that I had flipped, mind you, first time I'd ever done that, and it tasted very good. So my new pans are very good. Any other advice relative to buying?
Congratulations.
This is going to sound stupid. I've never bought a set of pots and pans in my life, right?
I think that's a good buy. They have good stuff at Triple B.
Well, Farberware? I don't know.
Faberware.
I think that's what I bought. But it made me laugh. But I mean, when I went away to college, I had my mom gave me some stuff, right? And I never bought I never bought another pan, you know. And so then, you know, I got married and I sure as hell wasn't going to be allowed to pick out anything, so I didn't. And then I just collected, like, you know, single pots and pans. I'll tell you another thing that makes me happy now. I bought more silverware from Target. I have this, like, it looks like pounded silverware, like, you know, so the handle, you know what I'm talking about? It looks like indentations. So I didn't have enough. So I went and bought more of it. Every time I open my silverware drawer, it makes me smile because I see a lot of forks in there. Now that's stupid, I know. And I had never bought a set of pots and pans in my life. And so I came home last night and I was laughing. So I took a picture of it and I sent it to Catherine and Colleen and Susan. I was like, I was like, boom! Yeah, got a whole set. And then I got back.
Hey, baby.
Yeah, we'll be over for dinner.
Statement.
We'll be over for dinner tomorrow. Let's test them out. I'm like, yeah, that's not necessary.
Okay. I have one other statement about your pepper mill.
Yes.
Now, when you look at it upside down, and you make sure that the gears in there are metal, not plastic. Okay, you turn it upside down and you can see whether it's plastic, it's made in China. If it's steel, it's probably made in Europe, or the States. But you don't want a plastic grinder inside because that breaks down very quickly, and pretty soon it's all the same, and it gets clogged up.
You know, the
Yes.
I'm serious about titanium. I have one. It's made of surgical grade titanium. What is he talking about?
Thank you.
Has he has he ever used a pot made of titanium? And then he goes on to say, "This is my punk ass friend." He said, he's told me I'm your best friend. No, you're not. You're so not my best friend. I'm serious about titanium. I have one. It's made with surgical grade titanium.
Uh-huh.
Have you ever cooked with titanium?
Not that I know of.
Well, you need to check it out.
I will check it out. it's also, if it's titanium, it's got to be exceptionally expensive.
Well, he's tunned up. He's a big real estate. He's like you. He's tunned up. He's got a big real estate guy.
Then.
Yeah, so price is no option.
Titanium is ass off.
Exactly.
For sure.
Yeah, he eats out of, like, bowls made from elephant tusks. He's that kind of guy. Here's an email entitled Salt Block Cooking. Hey, Mac, ask the chef if he's cooked on Himalayan salt block. I have them, and very cool to smear meats and ahi. Big Dave in Vacaville.
I have had things served on blocks of salt, Himalayan salt, like sushi and things like that, or steak. This one restaurant in Phoenix called Anchor Accor, Aroca Accor, excuse me, my wife just corrected me, Aroca Accor.
Yeah, we all heard
and,
that.
And they do a lot of cooking on salt blocks and serving it on cold, the sushi on cold salt blocks.
So do they cook it on the salt block or serve it, or both?
Both. I have not done it in my house, however.
What does it do?
It imparts the salt flavor on the fish or the meat if it's cooked.
I didn't think fish needed salt. I thought there was enough sodium in fish. No. Dave likes it.
Yeah. Your best friend, Dave?
Big Dave in Vacaville, man. Are you kidding me?
Oh, Dave from Vacaville.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've talked to Dave.
Yeah, no, he listens. He loves, a lot of people said, you know, when you first start having that chef guy on, I thought, what the hell? Like, we talk about military stuff. All of a sudden, this chef dude shows up. But now they're all fans of yours.
Well, thank you. I love talking about the food that I've been exposed to and that I still try to find out and experiment with. It's really fun, and it sounds like with the questions from your listeners that they're into it. They're into the cooking and the results that we're getting from doing what we tell them to do. I think that's just tremendous. So, thank you for listening, everybody. It's cool. Very cool.
That makes me
happy.
From my friend, who's not really my friend, the only reason we listen on Fridays is for Kim. Really? Now, see what you started? Now, everybody's acting all butch, right?
That's bullshit.
I know.
Because I listened the first hour today, and I learned so much about the discipline and the lack of it.
Thank you.
Your show is tremendous all the way.
Thank you very much.
And
here's another one. Here's another one from Maryland. It's not even from your family. Fans, especially me. That's from like the patron saint of All Marine Radio, Bob Nielsen. He loves you.
Oh.
I'm like, okay, look, let's back away from the ship. He ain't all that, okay? He's got issues. And they're like, screw you, Mac. Right?
I love it when you're jealous, Mac. You're so butch.
No, I know the truth. And they're like, oh, this, that, the other thing. Yeah. I'm like, okay, back away from the chef. It ain't all that, okay? He's got problems. Here's another email.
Yeah, he does.
Here's another email.
Yeah, he does.
Okay, I've tried the thumb method, and I've tried the digital meat thermometer. I'm not to the point where I'm confident with the thumb method. I'm really afraid that I will overheat the meat, but I'm learning. I think it's important to do both so you develop the skill that the chef's talking about, but you can confirm what you feel with your thumb. Does that sound smart or stupid?
That sounds brilliant. And I think it's real important.
Just for the record, that wasn't done for the guy who... That smart thing that just got written was not from the guy who's saying he's my friend in the Bay Area who eats his food off elephant tusks, okay? It's not from that guy. Okay? So just for the record. Yeah. But you know, that does sound smart, right?
That's the right approach.
Yeah, while you learn.
It's practice with your thumb.
Well, yeah.
But always have that thermometer in there. And so you know when to pull it off.
Right.
And that's when you the thermostat comes in handy.
Right.
You know, you have to let that meat rest for 10 minutes because it's still going to continue to cook. And even with your thumb, if you don't pull it off soon enough, you can still overcook it. But with a thermostat, it's pretty hard to screw up.
It is. It's impossible to screw it up.
Yes, it
is. It's unscrewable. Yes, it is. But I would say, I have this to say about that. I think that, you know, the combination of the two is very smart. And I'll relate that to land navigation, right? When you go out to do something, right, in the woods and with Marines, and the person who's the navigator looks at you and says, they're going to use one method of navigation. And normally they would say, I'm going to, how are you going to do this? Well, I'm going to train associate, sir. And so that means they have to know where they are, and they do that by, okay, well, this little hill's in front of me. That means the road's off to the right. That means the stream should be there. But in Quantico, there's so many similar terrain features, you can't only do that. And so, just like in cooking, it's best to, you can terrain associate, but you also verify what you see with your compass, right? And so when you see somebody who's walking through the woods start tapping their compass like it's stuck, that's a bad sign.
Yeah.
That means they think their compass is lying to them. What it really means is they screwed it up someplace. They zig.
And they're lost.
Right. They zig when they should have zagged. Now, if you have your compass, you'll see that sooner rather than later. And that's what you're trying to achieve, seeing it sooner, not later. So it's not a bad thing to have redundant things when you're cooking. It's simply not. And I mean, there's an old axiom in construction, measure twice, cut once. And so you see these very, very smart things, and they tend to be redundant. So I think it's, that email was sage-like in its brilliance. So.
Very much so, yes.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Very cool.
Thank you very much. Speaking of thank you very much, today is, I don't know what number it is, but the anniversary of Elvis Presley's passing.
Oh, boy.
Where were you when the king died?
Where was I when the king died? I was in... school, I think. Pretty sure.
It died August 16th, 1977 in Memphis, Tennessee at his home in Graceland, which has been widely chronicled. And
yes.
And, you know, you see pictures of him as a young, good-looking dude dancing and doing all that thing. And then you see pictures of him in a cape in Las Vegas. And it's like, where were his friends to look at him and say, hey, man, we need to dial this back. All the drugs, we need to stop. So that this would be the, what, 30, is it 40th anniversary of his death, dare I say? 30 would have got you to 2007. 40 would have got you 17.
So
the 42nd anniversary of the death of Elvis Presley.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I'll be darned.
Wow. Do you have a favorite Elvis Presley song?
Why Do Fools Fall in Love?
Why Do Fools Fall in Love? I think mine is Blue Christmas.
Blue Christmas. Without you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But it's the, you know, because when you think of Elvis, you think of, like, the sneered, you know, the whole lip thing. And then the, hum, wah, 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 right? So that's...
Well, I mean, wait, I remember coming back from Little League, and we're all singing Heartbreak Hotel or Hound Dog, you know.
Hold on. Here's Blue Christmas, all right? And to me, it's quintessentially him because it's a
I'll have a blue Christmas without you.
When I hear that, my head goes down and my right arm immediately, like, thrusts out like I'm singing it.
I can see it right now, Mac. I can visualize it exactly.
Oh my God! The his passing. But I think that's. But you know, you see, when he made one of his comebacks, he did a special for ABC where it's like Elvis in the round, and he's just sitting there with his guitar and his guys on stage, and they're playing music, and it's almost like I don't know, it's very popular in the 70s kind of a way where they're on a raised platform, and then there's, you know, seating, right, and then they film it, and you know, we'd never seen stuff like that, you know, everything very produced. You know, and stuff like that. And so, and you got a sense of his personality, and you see, you know, the wonderful side of him, and just the difficult road that he went down, and then the way people, you know, transform themselves. Michael Jackson the same way, so many entertainers the same way. They can't stand up to the scrutiny and the punishment that their lives take, and they wall them. They isolate themselves, and then bad things happen, so. Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. Coming back to isolation. All right. Big plans for the weekend. Have you seen a movie? What's going on?
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah. Somebody mentioned that movie to me. I said, I saw a friend. I have a friend who saw it, said it was awesome.
It's spectacular.
Really? Tarantino, though. Tarantino always has some violent, crazy stuff. Is there violent, crazy stuff in it?
Yes, it is, but not what you expect.
Really?
And yeah, it's fascinating, and the visual with that period in 68, 69 in Hollywood, the neon, the cars, the advertisements on the cans and the cigarette packs, and it's something that you have to see it, Mac. You will absolutely love it. It's not as violent as some of Tarantino movies like Django Unchained what's the Pulp Fiction. But it's got some action, man. It's worth seeing. I really recommend it. Everyone.
Really? All right. Well, we'll write that down.
Yeah.
And
And you cook up a storm this weekend with your new set of pots and pans.
No, I don't know. I'm torn. I might go to Sacramento. My high school class is having a barbecue, and I always they want me to come up, and I said, well, you know, if I can, you know, I will.
You go.
I don't even know that. Now here's another one of my favorite Elvis songs. Let me see if I can play it. Oh, hold on. I'll get it right. But so I might hop in the car and drive up to Sacramento. I love driving. I love driving through the country. I love seeing the big majesty of the United States of America. And I don't care if I'm driving from Los Angeles to Sacramento, which I've done a million times in my life. If I'm driving across the country or doing something else, I don't mind hopping in the car. I think it's a great way to think, and so I might do that this weekend and drive up there tonight or this afternoon, and then drive back on Sunday. So see my friends. My nephew Joe played baseball, college wood bat league in Florida, and so he's home for a few days, so he'll be home, so I'll get a chance to see him. And my cousin Tom, who I always love to see, his sister Patty, her son, just became a lieutenant, I don't know, in March, and then just got told he's going to be an infantry officer. So, my nephew Johnny, gonna be a man, and or at least, gonna possibly be a man. He's gotta get through it. And then my other nephew, my sister's son, he got commissioned last Saturday. How about that?
That's it.
Yeah.
Boom, baby.
Boom.
That's tremendous.
It's just go, cool because Max. They're so proud of
leader of the pack. You're the leader of the pack.
No, it's just, and it's a great experience. It'll change them forever. And I told my nephew last week.
Will.
I said, hey, let me just tell you, nobody else did this. You did this. And for the rest of your life, you can say, you know, I was a Marine or I am a Marine. And it's the coolest club you'll ever be involved in. But I love this Elvis song right here. He was in a trap.
We're caught in a trap.
Caught between life and Priscilla Presley. How do I get in that trap?
You're too much, baby.
Why can't you see what you're doing to me? You're killing me.
What you doing?
What you doing to me?
When you don't believe.
When you don't believe a word I say.
Only because I've seen it in all the tabloids, Elvis. Really?
We can't go on together.
Why would you have a suspicious mind? Oh, I love that song. It's like caught in a trap. And then you read the story behind it. It's like, yeah, he wrote it about his wife. It's like, here's another one of my favorite songs. That when you give it some thought, right, it's moderately amusing, right? So Frank Sinatra, wrote this about a one-night stand, okay? This is one of the great, like, he fell in love, like, right away. Okay?
Yes.
Maybe not. It's called Strangers of the Night.
Strangers in the Night, exchanging glances.
Strangers in the Night. Exchanging glances, wandering in the night. What were the chances we'd be sharing love before the night was through?
Okay, I think you call that a one-night stand, all right? Now, in that day and age, you called it, you know, I fell in love with her that night. And then I fell out of love with her the following day by about 9 in the morning. But it doesn't. Let's not ruin the song because of that, right?
That's right.
Oh, my God. It's the most romantic thing in the world.
Something in your eyes was so inviting.
Yeah, that look you get after your fourth gin and tonic, that look.
So exciting, something in my heart told me I must
have you.
Strangers in the night, two lonely people, we were strangers.
Oh, shit!
Up till the moment when we said our first hello.
Little did we know.
Love was just a glance away, a warm embracing dance away. And
oh, there you have it.
That's
but
it.
He does clean it up at the end. He says, ever since that night. So it's like they stayed together. But when you sit there and think about that, like, yeah, that's pretty... That's
thinking not about with Frank Sinatra.
the chairman, right? And I had this awesome vision of him singing that late, right, in some place in Manhattan, his bow tie of his tux undone, top button, scotch and a cigarette, and he's singing, right, just a man, just a man.
Great.
All right. Anything else before I let you go there, big man?
That's it, baby.
That's it.
You have a great weekend.
Yeah, no, I intend to. I intend to.
Enjoy Sacramento, and thanks for a good day.
No. I mean, to be honest, the next couple of weeks for me are going to be, maybe the next month. I mean, I go to Arizona. I go to Colorado next week and come home, and then I do post-traumatic winning on Friday for some Marines out at Camp Pendleton, and then the following week I'm in North Carolina, and then in September I'll be back in D.C. for a week doing post-traumatic winning back there and get a chance to see Patrick and my future second daughter-in-law, the lovely Sarah.
For you.
Yeah, and then I just, the Air Force called me and want me to do it for all their generals in October. Boom. No, you know, it's one of those things. Just keep doing good things. Keep your head down and just work hard and try to do good things and keep refining what you're doing. And, you know, if you can do enough good things, then maybe somebody's going to look at you and say, hey, man, can you help us? And I'm hopeful that that's where post-traumatic winning is going, because I believe in my heart, and 2nd Marine Division has proved it for me. And that, you know, what young people need is they need less isolation. They need more leaders that are strong leaders. They need the infrastructure that goes with learning to live a great life. And we can't back away from that. As much as our culture doesn't want to tell anybody what to do and doesn't want to hurt people's feelings, guess what? You know, sometimes in order to make an omelet. You have to break a few eggs, and
you've got to straighten it out.
Right. So anyway, all right, there. All right, big man.
Take care. Have a great weekend.
Very good. Kim Holmes. Thanks for listening today.
Help me share my load.
Here's some emails. Mac, I'm headed to Nashville in October for my wife's work meeting. I'm going to Graceland. I can't wait. Hey, man. everybody goes to Graceland. Here's another one. Fat Elvis was awesome. This was one entitled Costco. Guys, I'm walking through Costco with you on speaker playing Strangers in the Night, and your ass singing, LOL. Yeah, lucky for those people, huh? All right, so here's your instruction, man. Change somebody's life over the weekend. You don't even have to go looking for it. It'll just step in front of you. I promise you, download those commandments and those goals to your phone, and you're going to meet somebody who's really struggling. And then you could take them from the dark side of the street. Yeah, my thanks to Nancy for sending me the lyrics to the song last week. From the dark end of the street. It's our responsibility to get them to the bright side of the road. That'll do it. Our responsibility to get them to live the high life. Right? So, if you're just tuning in, don't touch that dial. In the first hour, I read and talked about what I think is a leadership problem in the Marine Corps. I have found a letter that I've been sent, and one of my heroes is General Anthony C. Zinni. And I talk about him, I talk about the letter that he wrote about staff non-commissioned officers, and that's the enlisted leadership of the Marine Corps, and how it is truly referred to as the backbone of the Marine Corps. But in the email, he talks about what they do, what they provide. They provide the discipline, whether it be in combat or in garrison, right? They're the ones that enable us to always answer the bell. Well, if we have an issue, then we have to look at what institutionally has happened to them, because they're not worse. Trust me, they're not worse. The issue is us and what we have done to them and the limits we've placed on them that may or may not be reasonable. And some people say, oh, they're really reasonable. Well, I don't think they are, because look at the results you're getting. So anyway, we'll talk about that. I'll read the letter and whatnot. So anyway, and then the chef. We didn't talk about food very much, but it was a very cool show. The chef got emotional. What the hell, man? I was asking about happy stuff, and he started crying on me. What the hell? Anyway, have a great weekend. On a Friday, All Marine Radio is over and out.